This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday. On the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's see. It is Thursday, and that means we got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. It also means we have Writer Then Write Trivia. Jeffrey, Kevin Cerrito is going to be joining us. We'll be handing out a fabulous prize.
Indeed, Jeff. We got a triple prize pack for everyone. So we're going to have, of course, tickets to 901 Wrestling's final show of the calendar year. That's November the 24th at Minglewood. That will be a Sunday afternoon at 5 p.m. Kevin's also throwing in tickets to this weekend's Coffee Expo. And then we will also have four tickets to the Grizzlies Nuggets game on Sunday. So the Sunday game, that's the 17th. So we'll have four tickets to give away for the Grizzlies and Nuggets. I believe, Jeff, that's the cup game, but let me confirm.
The game against the Warriors is a cup game.
Yeah, but I think one of the Nuggets game is a cup game. Let me double check.
Does it give it extra juice for you if it's a cup game?
I mean, Jeff, you got the new floors. I mean, we've already seen what Spoelstra did under cup pressure.
Right, exactly right. Remind me, coffee.
Yes, sir.
What's your approach?
So I've tried to cut back because, you know, I'm not someone that needs, like, help in the jitters department. And so I'm trying to cut back. I would say I've gone to where it's like twice a week. I've gotten rid of having to do.
Really? Just twice a week? You don't drink coffee every day?
No, I've gotten away from that. And I mean, I used to hammer it.
I feel like I should go to Coffee Expo. And that's why we're talking about this, because I mean, I drink gallons of coffee. And I feel like I should drink more highbrow coffee. Like I should care more.
Sure.
I don't do the little cups. Because I have the sense that that's wasteful, but that's just whatever. I know whether I'm using a million cape cups and is not really going to save the planet or not. So I have a drip coffee maker, and I like having a pot of coffee that you can wander over anyway. I have gone to half calf. I don't buy half calf, but I go to Costco and get a big thing of regular coffee and a big thing of half of decaffeinated. And
yeah, you blend it.
And then I just eyeball it. Do you think I measure it by spoonful and whatever? No,
of course not. No chance.
No, I just eyeball it. So every cup is it's like a snowflake. Every cup is different.
Or dog's nose.
And then during the course of the day, and this is heresy, I'm sure, to the people at Coffee Expo, because at some point the coffee maker turns off, the pot of coffee turns off, it gets cold, then I just microwave it and I just drink it for the rest of the day that way. Is that make me a heathen?
No, I think that makes you a normal person, because rather than brewing a whole nother pot, which is wasteful, by the way.
I'm with you.
I mean, I used to be the guy that not only like would I brew my own pot in the morning.
You'd grind your own.
I have an espresso machine, and so I would grind my own espresso, but I would also, like, you know, I'd go to Starbucks at some point during the day on top of the other coffee that I made. Like, it was bad.
Anyway, all right, we're going to play Right or the Right Trivia in the second hour. We will be giving away this fabulous prize pack.
The Tuesday, it's the Nuggets on Sunday. The Tuesday Nuggets game is the cup game, not the one.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah.
And we'll be doing that. Either have to best Jeffrey, which is not easy to do, or you have to play honorably, which should be easy to do. And then you will get the fabulous prize. So that is it. Chris Harrington, straight up at 10 o'clock. Then Righter Than Right Trivia with Kevin Cerrito and Jeffrey Wright in the second hour. Grizz lose. I'll be honest. I thought we'd be playing. There was a moment in the third quarter.
I totally agree.
When Luke Kennard drained a three.
Yeah.
When I thought we'd be playing highlights today.
Yeah, when the Lakers were infighting and everything, you could tell like
AD
vibes were bad.
Had foul trouble. Yeah. AD had five fouls. Luke Kennard's lighting it up from three. Marcus Smart's playing well. Grizzlies are riding the good vibes. They're up by nine in the third quarter. AD was off anyway, and then he was in foul trouble. He was having trouble with Zach Eadie, yes, for God's sakes. And I'm like, we're going to be playing highlights tomorrow. That's fantastic. And it was not to be.
No.
And obviously, when you look at it, you could simply say hat tip to two players who are pretty awesome in LeBron James and AD, who came in. AD re-entered the game, re-entered the fray, hit two massive threes.
Yeah.
And really, they just played a two-man game down the stretch. LeBron and AD versus whatever, the Grizzlies' dramatically diminished lineup. Shouldn't you just tip your cap and say, listen, if LeBron's going to go for 35, 12 rebounds, and 14 assists, his third straight double-double. By the way, LeBron has two 30-point games this year, both against the Grizzlies. Ja Morant is right to hate the Lakers. I do too. 35, 12, and 14 for LeBron. AD rallies to finish with 21 and 14. Plus, by the way, Rui, Grizz killer, 19, and Dalton Connect. He must have heard people talking ass about him last week because Dalton Connect was lighting it up. In fact, Dalton Connect was really, as much as anything, the reason they stayed in it. 19 points, 7 of 8 from the field, 5 of 5 from 3, plus 17. All you Dalton Connect disparagers last week had to eat that last night. And so the Lakers win. There is certainly no shame in losing to the Lakers on the road when you don't have Ja Morant, when you don't have Desmond Bain, when you don't have Vince Williams, you know, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know. I ended up disappointed, partly because it is such a diminished lineup that you look ahead and you got the Warriors next, and that's not going to be easy. They're eviscerating people. And then you got a twofer against Denver. And Jokic is absolutely balling now, best player in the world, playing like the best player in the world. So this felt like, of this next group of games, it felt like the most winnable, and it certainly felt like the most winnable when you're up by nine in the third quarter. So I come away thinking, yeah, okay, there's no disgrace in this, but I was very late at night. I found myself discouraged by the way that it turned out. How about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I also think that there's just something about, like, we've kind of developed a little bit of a rivalry with them. And there's just something about when you lose a rivalry game, it just kind of stings. I really thought more than, I agree with everything you said there, but I kind of just distilled it down to, man, if the Lakers make 23s, like, that's not a great three-point shooting team. And they made 20. And it's like, how much of that was bad defense? How much of that was shot-making?
Yeah, that goes back to, I mean, literally connect is 5 from 5. I think you're right. 23s, LeBron another triple-double, and 35, AD 21. Like, you're not going to win that game. Here's the problem, though. I do think even within it, there were chances to win that game.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm not going to jump on the Taylor Jenkins, is a moron bandwagon that some people are driving, but I will ask you whether these two criticisms are fair.
Okay.
Okay. One is Jaren. So Jaren goes out with 6 minutes. With 6 minutes and 1 second left in the game, picks up his fifth. And he goes out with 5:51. Santi comes in. Okay. At that point, the Grizzlies are trailing by two. All right. Jaren's sitting with five fouls. He does not. The Lakers then take a timeout. That's at 5:51. The Lakers take a timeout at 4:04. It's still a 1-point game. Grizzlies trailing by one. They do not. He does not reinsert Jaren in the game at that point. LeBron then gets a dunk. AD gets a three. It's now 116 to 110 with 3:48 left. So really 16 seconds left. And that was that. Like now he's back in. They're down by six and they end up winning by five. Is it fair or is it being picky to be critical of him for not putting Jaren back in the game when it was to be won? And by the way, AD came back in the game with five fouls with 6:48 left and, you know, played through it. And I will point out, Jaren Jackson did not foul out.
Yeah.
He did not foul out. He could have played more. Is that, of course, it's small potatoes within a larger scheme of which they're doing a good job strapping things together with terrible injuries and whatnot and developing players. But is that a fair criticism?
I think it is, but I think there's also an element of damned if you do, damned if you don't, because that presumes to me, it's like, does he get no credit for the fact that, as you point out, they're strapping this together with like duct tape.
Oh, he gets immense credit for that.
And it's like the only reason why we're focusing on this is because they were in the game.
Agreed.
But I'm with you in the sense of, I thought especially, because Edie, I thought, played well. But when Edie fouls out, like to me at that point, it's like, okay, you've got to have somebody in there with some size. And you had to get him back in there. Because I don't care. If he fouls out and then they end up losing by eight, I don't care. I would much rather you be in there when the game was still hanging in the balance. Because it felt like once it got to a two-possession game, they just couldn't make up the difference.
The other micro-criticism is end of the third, when they're up nine, he plays a lineup of Smart, Kennard, Conchar, Laravia, and Huff. No Edie. No Jaren. It's Smart, Kennard, Conchar, Laravia, and Huff. And that was the lineup that that Connect lit up. And, you know, that's when he was going off in the third quarter. And all of a sudden, it wasn't a 9-point lead. It was a 1-point lead.
So maybe you feel differently. I was okay with that because I guess people forgot the end of the second half or the end of the first half. Like in the second quarter, that was largely the lineup that somehow got to the half down one.
Marcus Smart was really good. By the way, and Chris tweeted this out, there was some question as to whether what Marcus Smart's return would be a positive or a negative.
Yeah.
It was clearly a positive. I mean, he was instrumental to that. They started out the game, gotten just lit up in the first quarter. And it felt like Marcus Smart was a big part of settling on. He played 23 minutes. 15 points, 6 assists in those 23 minutes. Edie, as we pointed out, was really good. 26 minutes, scored 12 points. He was plus 12 in his 26 minutes. Again, I was just frustrated. I was just frustrated. So I'm looking to blame people here on this morning, Jeffrey. John Conchar, minus 12 in 11 minutes. Can we be done without that? How about this? Santi clanking threes. Like there was
he had a couple of wide open
threes. He had it right, honestly, right before AD hit one of his big threes. Santi had a wide open three in the corner.
And then he had remember he had that possession where he got two cracks at it, like wide open. I think it was top of the key threes. And it's just like,
well, and this goes back to then what you were saying. The Lakers had 20 threes and Santi was 2 of 7 from three.
Well, and
you
also
know,
Wells
make or miss league.
Wells had some bad miss. That's the other thing that always shocks me. It's like normally when NBA guys miss, it's still kind of close. Like Wells was like missing some that were like off the side of the backboard. And he get it. He's young. I'm not blaming him for the loss. But like I'm with you. I shared the frustration, but I think most of the frustration.
And Jarvis is weighing in now. Jarvis says it's picky. He said, points out that AD did, of course, foul out. Jaren didn't, as I said, but AD did. And so whatever. I do think that's picky. I was just frustrated.
I think it just speaks to it being this. Like it shows, like this is a rivalry game.
I thought they had a chance. Yeah. And here's the other thing. I know that we're assuming, and I am assuming, that the Grizzlies are going to come back healthy. And when they're healthy, they look like they can be. I mean, there's so many good pieces on this team, right? Like, who has disappointed? I guess Brandon Clark. But if you look at it, like Jay Hoff, Scottie Pippen, Jalen Wells, Jake LaRavia, Edie, like everyone. Jaren is being his best self. He was terrific again last night. Ja was like, everyone has been playing as well or better than I expected, with the possible exception of Brandon Clark.
I would agree with Brandon Clark. I also think, though, embedded in the back of our minds, though, is this question of, all right, are they going to turn back into a pumpkin? Because I agree with everything you said.
But I'm just worried about picking up wins along the way. You know, like, in the end, you look at the West, and it is murderous, and so I'm worried about picking up wins along the way. When you're looking at a schedule now that, okay, without Ja, you're going to be playing the Warriors and Denver twice, all of a sudden you're muddling around under 500.
Yeah, I'm with you. I also think, though, they're not, considering everything we've just laid out, they're not really giving ground. And then eventually everybody else is going to start to have some injuries too. And like, they're going to,
well, others have. Yeah.
It's like, how do they deal with it, whatnot? I think the key is, in this scenario last year, the Grizzlies were god awful. In this scenario this year, they're acquitting themselves respectably.
Oh yeah, very well. They're acquitting themselves very well. They're eviscerating bad teams, and then they played a Lakers team at home with LeBron. The guy's unbelievable. I mean, he's just unbelievable.
I can't remember. I don't know which broadcast you were watching, but I think the Grizzlies put up some, or I think the Grizzlies broadcast put up like some graphic. It's like players with consecutive triple doubles, like over the age of like 35. There's three players. He's two of them.
All right. Well, while I was being excessively picky, and I confessed to that over the loss last night.
You got the Chiefs this week, so you're going to be on edge, just period.
I'm a little surly. Yes. I'm a little surly, you know. Let me give you some more positive Grizzlies news. Over at Sam Vecenie over at The Athletic does a rookie ranking. And guess who leads the rookie ranking, Jeffrey?
Is it Jalen?
No, it's not, but it is another Grizzly. Zach Edey leads the rookie ranking, and really? Jalen Wells is two.
I thought if we're looking for like the positives last night, I thought Edey was really good.
Really good. Really good. This is a little long, but I'll give you some of what he says.
Let's hear.
I mean, his rankings, by the way, are Zach Edey one, and he says he would put him clearly in a tier by himself. Then Jalen Wells, then Jared McCain, Dookie, who I loved in the draft, then Ryan Dunn, who we saw here at FedEx Forum playing for Virginia. The miracle about Ryan Dunn is always known to be a fabulous defensive player. Now he's hitting shots. Then Bub Carrington, Zachary Risa-Shea, Yves Misi, AJ Mitchell, Alex Sarr, Donovan Klingon, Keyshawn George, Stephon Castle, etc. Right down the list. So there you go. But the Grizzlies are one and two. And here we go. On Zach Edey, he started his NBA career a bit slowly over the first week, struggling with foul trouble and his positioning overall. However, he's been extremely valuable since then. Since October 30th, Edey is averaging 13.1 points, 7.6 rebounds, and over assist, steal, and block per game. He's achieving every hope the Grizzlies had for him upon drafting him 9th in June, providing a substantial degree of toughness and physicality the team lacked last season because of injuries and the departures of Steven Adams and Jonas Valanciunas. Already, Edey is playing the role of the biggest bully in the schoolyard. Anybody who spoke with him and watched him in college knew he not only embraces physicality, but he also refuses to back down in the face of anyone trying him. More importantly, Edie is also starting to become a serious deterrent on the defensive end. Standing 7'4 with a near 8-foot standing reach, Edie is already an excellent help defender around the rim, rotates well, makes himself available to contest around the basket. Among the 48 NBA players contesting at least 4 shots around the rim per game, Edie's percentage against a 55.8 ranks 15th best. Moreover, he's also making early strides in ball screen defense, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Last week, he outplayed both Andre Drummond and Nick Claxton and was excellent later in the week against the Wizards and Blazers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So far, so good. Edie's performance hasn't necessarily been a surprise, given that he was National Player of the Year in college basketball each of the last 2 seasons. But Jalen Wells, that's definitely a surprise. Talks a little bit about his history here and then says, Wells earned his way into being selected 39th and has emerged as a starter while Desmond Bane misses time with an oblique injury. Wells has done so by sticking to what he does best, knocking down shots from distance. Wells is averaging 11.4 points per game while drilling 39.2% of his threes and providing real space for guys like Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. to attack on offense. He's also done a good job of leaking out on the break and finding chances in transition, and occasionally he does a good job of attacking closeouts and cutting to the rim. Memphis also hands Wells the responsibility most nights of guarding the opposing team's toughest perimeter player to take that job away from Morant. He's already been tasked with taking on guys like Tyrese Maxey, Cam Thomas, and other terrific scorers. The results have been mixed, as it would be for any rookie, but there's every reason to believe Wells is already a massive steal for a Grizzlies scouting department that consistently has found key contributors outside of the top 20. See Bane, Gigi Jackson, Vince Williams, Santi Aldama, and others, et cetera, et cetera. The top 2 rookies in the league this year are Memphis Grizzlies. There, I have now made amends, Jeffrey, for my earlier picky criticisms. And by the way, Taylor Jenkins, with his next win, will tie Lionel Hollins for most regular season wins in Grizz history. So there you go. Any other thoughts on last night's disappointing loss or the glowing performance of our rookies?
Yeah, I really do think Edie's starting to get into a rhythm. I guess the other way that I look at it is I think the Grizzlies have won 3 games as an underdog. I think they've lost 4 games as a favorite. They're basically kind of right where they're supposed to be.
Of course, some of those, I agree with that, but baked into whether they were a favorite or an underdog is the injuries. In other words, before the season began, we thought they would be better than this because we didn't realize they would be this injured. So the fact that they are losing games that they're supposed to lose as an underdog, when they're only underdogs because they are injured, that doesn't solve the larger problem of let's not fall too far behind here. Right. Just look up at the West. Look up at the West. See what they're doing, and you'll understand the challenge in front of them.
I guess the biggest negative is just the injuries again. Like, to me, like, that's the frustration is, like, we keep saying they made a joke about it on the broadcast last night. It's like when the Grizzlies get healthy, and then Brevin's like, if, like, that's the frustration.
Yeah. No, there's no question. All right. Moving on, we'll talk more about this with Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. He also, by the way, has his weekly film reviews or his review of what is showing, what films are being screened in Memphis this week. That's up at the Daily Memphian. Are you aware of the film called Red One?
I'm not.
It stars The Rock.
Oh, it's the Christmas movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's he protecting? What's happening? So it's Christmas movie.
It's like a Christmas action movie. So J.K. Simmons is playing Santa Claus, and Santa Claus gets kidnapped, and The Rock puts together a team to go save Santa Claus. I'm in.
I will enjoy that movie.
I'm in.
I may not see it, but if I do see it, I will enjoy it. I am not too good. Or even too sophisticated for the Red One. Anyway, we'll talk to Chris about all this when he joins us at 10. In other matters, I did talk to Craig Unger yesterday appreciated him giving his perspective on this, president of 901 FC, the team that used to be 901 FC, and the Memphis Redbirds, because it was during our show yesterday, I think, Jeffrey, that they put out the statement basically saying, listen, we're sorry, 901 FC is moving. That's really unfortunate. But by the way, it is a sobering reminder or a sobering, reminder that it is a privilege to have these teams and that we need to fix AutoZone Park. So I talked to him and a couple things. One, on the departure of 901 FC, it's just very clear. Like, this was done when they didn't get a stadium. This was done, right? And other people will say, well, why didn't they look for other alternatives? They're really... There weren't really other alternatives. The league wasn't interested in some, you know, modification of Mike Rose or whatnot. And so
the league heard Santa Barbara and they're like, we're going there.
There's that too. So where they have a stadium there where like the U.S. women's national team is like, what it's a, yes, and it's Santa Barbara. So, but whatever, I do think if they had gotten a new stadium, they would not have moved. And it was interesting because, as I said yesterday, in a poor city, you have to establish priorities. And honestly, there's a serious question as to what sort of priorities sports arenas should be generally. But even then, if you are saying, all right, we're going to put some money up for sports arenas and the state's going to give us money for arenas, you establish priorities within that. And I will not quibble with a decision to value the Grizzlies and the Tigers over a fledgling soccer team. That makes all the sense in the world to me. If you're asking me what's important, really, 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 really important in sports in Memphis, it's keeping the Grizzlies and it's supporting the Tigers. And so I have no problems with that, sense of priorities. It aligns with my sense of priorities, honestly. And I think any thinking Memphian's sense of priorities. I'll say this though, what Craig said about that was, and I just quoted him, he said, listen, we had lobbyists at the state too, and we were lobbying for the 350 because it was understood that our money would come from the $350 million. That's why we were there on board with lobbying for the 350. We had meetings in advance. We went there. We knew how it was going to be carved up. And after we got the 350, now you've pointed out before, the 350 always seemed woefully inadequate, but whatever, his point was they lobbied for the 350 and got behind 350 because the understanding is they would get a certain chunk of it. And then after it changed. And so that's why he feels a little betrayed by that process. And while I think the priorities are right, you got to keep the Grizzlies here and you got to support the University of Memphis. I don't know how the process went down. And if that is how it played out, I do understand why he would be disappointed from his perspective or feel a little effed over from his perspective. And so that was interesting. In terms of the Redbirds, it's sort of curious, Jeffrey, because just in terms of interest, if you could pick the Red, not in terms of anything, history or anything else, just literally interest right now, is there more interest in 901's FC or in the Redbirds?
I think as a competitive enterprise, 901 FC, right?
I agree completely. It's sort of the growing sport. There's sort of a young vibe to it. It's like...
Well, I always just think baked in with minor league baseball, it's like it's an event. It's something to do. It's something to go see. But like, you're not really...
No one cares.
You don't care.
And people did care about 901 FC. People cared about 901 FC. Not they didn't care enough. But the other thing he said about 901 FC, interestingly, was he reminded me that, so they had 2019 when they had really good crowds, they had a really good vibe. There are lots of stories about the parades through the street and all that, the smoke bombs and the, you know, the Bluff City Mafia and the vibe and the fun. And that was a terrible team, honestly, that first year, but everyone had a blast. And then starting in the second year, opening day, opening night, whatever it was, they had 8,000 people there. And that was early March. And then everything shut down. And he said, even when we brought people back, we brought people 750 people back. And then we brought gradually more and more and more. And the instructions were, you can't cheer. You know, like, because you want to get your molecules on people or whatever, you know. So he really does think. Now, that wouldn't have solved the stadium problem, right? The impact of COVID would not have solved the stadium problem. Maybe the momentum for the franchise would have been different, so a solution for the stadium would have emerged had COVID not sort of taken all the wind out of the sails of that franchise. They never got back to the attendance that they had after COVID. So that was sort of interesting. On the Redbirds, what he said was they have a deal with the Cardinals through 2030. So they're here through 2030. But between now and then, and it won't be 2030 when both the Cardinals and the Redbirds have to make up their mind as to what they're going to do going forward. The Cardinals would have to find a new place to develop their AAA players, and the Redbirds would have to find a new place to play, et cetera. So sometime in the next few years, a decision will be made about what's going to happen going forward. And his point there is simply, it's a city-owned facility. It's 25 years old, and basically nothing has been done. And so it needs, at minimum, just for starters, $25 million of work to restore it to where it should be as a ballpark, and really more than that. But he tossed out the number 25 million. And the problem, of course, is that, again, we're a poor city, right? You're a poor city. You need money for MATA. You need money for, there was a story in the Daily Memphian recently about all the police cars that were broken. You remember that story, Jeffrey?
Yes.
Like whatever percentage of how the police fleet doesn't work. There's like all kinds of potholes, roads, like there's all kinds of needs in this city. And so do you have $25 million for a ballpark? I would say that, again, it's priorities. There's no question they were going to find the money for the Grizzlies and should have and have. Still need a lease. We'll figure that out. They found the money for the Tigers through the state money and then Fred Smith and the Smith family ponying up. The Redbirds, the ask is smaller than for soccer. And the need, because you just can't have an empty AutoZone Park at 3rd and Union as an empty shell of a, you know, as a ruin there. I think the need is greater. The need is greater and the ask is smaller. So I will kind of be surprised if they don't find the money to satisfy the Redbirds moving forward, but it remains to be seen. And I also think this is in the context of dwindling attendance, like horrible attendance.
Yes, their worst year in a long time.
That is to some extent a lack of interest in minor league baseball, but it's also goes part and parcel with the struggles of downtown. And the good news about the Redbirds is if the Redbirds are drawing people, that's more than 70 dates a year where they're bringing people downtown, right? Like,
make more money than some of the other things you've been investing in.
Right. So I think they'll probably find the money for them. It's sort of like, it's interesting. It's too damn bad that 9-1 FC couldn't play there, too. Cause I do think, honestly, there's more interest in 9-1 FC there is in the Redbirds, but somehow the Redbirds leaving would be a bigger blow than 901 FC leaving. They're not leaving in the next year or two because they're here through 2030. We know the Cardinals are coming to kick off next season. And so that is that. I don't know how much you talked about this on your show yesterday, Jeffrey. Any further thoughts on all of these developments?
I mean, the only complication with all of this is I don't love when a private equity firm sits there and goes like, you need to pony up. It's a privilege to have this team when they haven't invested anything. All they've done is buy the rights to the franchise. And then
I agree. How is a private equity firm any different than Robert Pera? Like, is there some reason that you like either way? It's a private business. Now the Grizzlies are more important. I say that like that's, but is it either way? It's a private business.
I don't feel like
public money going to a private business.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on all that, but I don't feel like Robert Pera has publicly threatened us.
Okay, let me ask you this, though. Isn't it almost better? Like the Grizzlies never say anything. The Grizzlies literally never say anything. This entire arena thing with the Grizzlies has been done behind the veil. And I don't think it serves them necessarily well. They don't want to alarm people, and I do respect that. They don't want to, you know, drum up panic, because there would be panic, right? But at some level, don't you want to know? It's like a coach, Jeffrey. If you do this, you will get playing time. If you don't do this, you won't get playing time. Isn't there something I actually kind of respected Craig Unger for saying, okay, here's the, I thought maybe you could say the timing's a little crass. Like, hey, it's a little bit like when you're holding hostages, right? And it's not working. Like, yeah. No one thinks you're going to shoot one. So you shoot one and you throw them out the window and then they know you need business.
You think I won't do this again?
Right. Exactly. The hostage was 901 FC. So I can see that that's a little crass on the day that 901 FC leaves to say, you could be next. I got him. I'm holding him right here. I got the Redbird right here with a gun to its head. I can see that, but isn't there at least they're at least blunt? We need this or this. The threat of leaving, if you don't pay up, we'll leave. That's there whether you say it or not. Like, it's there for the Grizzlies, right? People aren't just voluntarily handing over $550 million or whatever it is to the Grizzlies. They're doing it because of the threat they might leave. It's unspoken with the Grizzlies. It was spoken now with the Redbirds because, honestly, they didn't feel like they were getting attention.
I guess there's some truth to that because, on the one hand, I think maybe if the Grizzlies were a little bit more public, maybe you wouldn't have certain politicians that are essentially like using the Grizzlies as like fodder and bait. So maybe there's something to that. I'm just very over. We are in an era of public negotiation. It's all just public negotiations.
Unseemly.
And I'm just like, man, like this is, you're messing with stuff that people care about.
That's 100% true. And that is absolutely true with and maybe that's the argument for the Grizzlies being they're not messing with people's emotions. They're keeping it down low. They're not trying to stir up interest in other cities or whatever else. They're saying to as long as we can do this respectfully and there's progress being made, we'll keep it under wraps. And I do respect them for that. So there you go. All right. We got to take a break. We got Chris Harrington join us at 10 o'clock. We got Right of the Right trivia after that. I will remind you, you can bet on the NFL over at FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Got a humdinger tonight, Jeffrey. Commanders and Eagles right there in your very own division. Will you be rooting for one of these?
Oh, yeah. Die, Eagles, die.
Die, Eagles, die.
Yeah.
Anyway, over at FanDuel, if you're new, wager one $5 bet. And if you win, you get $150 in bonus bets. How about that? $150 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. Just go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to make every moment more this season. FanDuel is an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older in present Tennessee. First online real money wager, only $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're thinking about getting engaged. Well, congratulations. It's a tough world out there. To have found the person you'd want to spend your life with is a grand thing. So that's the first bit thing. Second thing is, now get yourself to Robert Irwin Jewelers, because they're great. They really are great. They take all the pressure out of what is a highly pressurized purchase. I know, because once I bought an engagement ring, I bought it from a friend of a friend who hooked me up with this guy. And when I took it in to be appraised later, it was literally on her finger at this point. And it was not worth what I paid for it. That's not going to happen to you at Robert Owen Jewelers, where they have spectacular, beautiful diamonds for better prices. And they have the meant-to-be guarantee, which means if you buy your diamond custom-made engagement ring at Robert Owen Jewelers, you have 365 days to return it. Lots of other stuff they offer, too. Free ring sizing for life, free jewelry spa service for life, buffing, polishing, ultrasonic cleaning, all of that. They've got 24 months deferred interest or up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. But there's a reason that Robert Irwin, those folks have been here for more than 40 years now in Memphis. It's because they do a beautiful job handling this most important purchase. So if you're in the market this holiday season, no better time. Go see our friends at Robert Irwin Jewelers. They've got locations all over the Memphis area. I go to the one across from Novel on Perkins Extended. Find the one closest to you or check them out at rijewelers.com. Jeffrey, I do want to. You were railing against private equity.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, your case has been somewhat strengthened.
Yeah.
Because, and I say this with sadness, in the CA this morning, the headline says Memphis Bobcats set to take on Ohio Tigers. Now, the truth of the matter is there are lots of really good journalists over at the CA, and they have nothing to do with this. Back when they used to say that the writers don't write the headlines, that was true then in newspapers. Editors wrote the headlines, but now the editors are, you know, wherever the hell they are. They're in Des Moines or, you know, Albuquerque or, you know, whatever. They don't know anything. And honestly, they probably don't know anything about sports, and they don't know anything about Memphis, and they're writing the headlines. And so you have Jason Munn's byline, literally Jason Munn's, who devotes his life to covering the Tigers. His byline is on a story stripped across the top of the newspaper, says Memphis Bobcats set to take on Ohio Tigers. That is...
I guess, though,
private equity at work, man, right there.
At least they did get the two nicknames correct.
they just
you know what I mean?
Them. Well, and they got the geographic region
correct. They got the cities correct, and they got the school correct. They just didn't put it together. They didn't finish the play.
The Danny Memphian makes mistakes too. But my point, larger point, is that this is about private equity stripping down proud journalist enterprises and trying to save money above all. And this is what you get. And this it's systemic. This wasn't someone in Memphis making a mistake. This was someone in wherever the hell who didn't know what they were doing because they don't have nothing. They have no connection to Memphis. And because the Gannett is now owned, you know, whatever, it's ridiculous. So, you know, Gannett has been largely stripped down, and so there you have it. It's the bad side of corporate America.
Yes.
Honestly. All right. Let's play Believe It or Not. Dion does have the power to intervene if any of the two very highly ranked Colorado Buffaloes, including his son, are drafted by the wrong team.
I believe he has the right. It's the matter.
But is he the ability? He clearly has the right. Does he have the ability? What does that mean? I mean, paint the picture here. Who has a high pick who could pick, you know, Shador, let's say, or Travis Hunter, either one of them?
Well, I'm sure he doesn't want either to go to the Giants. I think what we're starting to
see... Do you think that's true? You got the New York market there.
I don't think Shador in New York would be good.
So what does he do?
This is exactly what you do. You like what we've been seeing is that people apply the pressure before the draft, and that you try to create the idea that, all right, well, rather than deal with this headache, we're just not going to deal with it. We'll pick somebody else. Like, that was kind of what Caleb Williams' dad was doing. I mean, you know, he was trying to say, like, we want some ownership and whatnot. Like, in the end, the Bears were like, yeah, no, we're picking Caleb Williams, like, moving on. So I think what we start to see is people make a lot of noise before the draft, but in the end, like, can they prevent a team from selecting him? No. And then there's always going to be the weird reality of, do you really not want to get selected as highly as possible? Because that does affect you financially.
All right. If you were really rich, you'd have $20,000 in cash in your house. And I asked that question because we know now, and this is the kind of story that if it happened in Memphis, people would say, what an asshole Memphis is. Memphians would say that, right?
Yeah.
Because it happened in Kansas City, it's just whatever, haha, or too bad, or however you react. But both Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce were burglarized. And Kelce, we know, they took $20,000 in cash. So again, if you were really rich, you would have $20,000 of cash in your house.
I'm going to say I don't believe that because I've largely gone away from cash, and
maybe if you were really rich, it would be like, I've gone away from cash too. Right. Which is for me, I'm a late adopter of Venmo, but I now happily Venmo away. Right.
Yeah.
But I got $32 in my wallet, let's say. Right.
I mean, and I think I have seven.
Maybe for Travis Kelce, $20,000 is the equivalent. Right? Like, it's nothing. It's not.
Sure, it's petty cash.
I don't know why you'd need $20,000 of cash. What the hell do you need $20,000? I don't think I would.
Yeah.
I would not have $20,000 of cash in my house.
I mean, I guess.
I could have $3 billion and I wouldn't have $20,000 of cash in my house.
I guess if I were trying to make a case for him, he's clearly jet setting a lot. And so, you know.
What did they do? Maybe, I don't know how this. I mean, honestly,
that's what I was thinking. Like tipping, you know. I mean, they.
That may be.
You know what I mean? Like
you're not tipping by Venmo, and so you're handing out cash everywhere you go to the vet, to the valet, to whatever who takes your car. Like maybe that's it.
And maybe like he's the guy that. All right, I'm not going to always take out. Like I'm not going to take out cash everywhere I go. I'm just going to take out 25 grand, and then when I need to take out another 25 grand, I'll do that. But. Like, he just works off of it. Like, you could talk me into that.
Michael Strahan, and I missed this whole thing, so I'm late to this. It was Michael Strahan did a terrible thing when he did not have his hand over his heart during the national anthem Sunday.
I do not believe this. This story has driven me insane because...
big has it been? I missed it until, like, somehow.
So what made it a big deal was, like, a TMZ or a paparazzi... Or a paparazzo, I guess, like tried to get in his face on Monday, maybe. And was like, why didn't you have your hand over your heart during the national anthem? The thing that drove me insane was that I don't know what the etiquette is for the national anthem because I was told from a military perspective, you don't put your hand over heart during the national anthem. You stand at attention, you put your hands behind your back, and you face the flag. Like, I believe Strahan's father is military.
That's not- Strahan's father, the whole thing's so preposterous. I mean, Strahan's father served 23 years in the army and cares. Strahan
and I believe cares. Michael has like donated millions to armed like forces and veteran causes.
Cares deeply about, deeply proud of his father, his military service, the whole thing. The story is preposterous, right? But evidently in the piece that I was reading on this, civilians are supposed to put their hand over their heart, according to some, you know, regulation somewhere. Like, that is the appropriate way to do it. Here, it's a column by Steve Buckley that I read. According to U.S. flag code, civilians, quote, should face the flag and stand at attention with their right hand over the heart, or if applicable, move their headdress with their right hand and hold it at the left shoulder, the hand being over the heart. So that's what civilians should.
Okay, why don't we teach this? Because I don't think that's.
Who the hell cares? What? Let me ask you this: at a Grizzlies game, what do you do?
I do exactly what I just told you. I stand at attention and I have my hands behind my back because that's what I was taught to do when when you play sports.
I'll be honest. I kind of stand. I'm shifting one foot from the other. I might actually be looking down at my phone. not in my hand. I won't like do that because that seems disrespectful. I'll kind of hide it. I'll have my phone will be on the desk in front of me, and I might like be kind of just scrolling a little bit as I do it. It's the whole thing's ridiculous. I don't jump up and down and spit, but it's played before every damn game. It is devalued by the fact that we play it before every game. Just look at the way looking around. People are scratching and they're yawning and it's preposterous. And he was totally respectful. Totally respectful.
Yeah, this story drove me insane.
As a Jets fan, I should be happy that Aaron Rodgers said, when asked if he would play in 2025, said, I think so. As a Bills fan, I should be happy that Aaron Rodgers said when asked if he would play in 2025, I think so.
Yeah, I do believe this. He's diminished. Like, his arm's still great. I think his mind's still pretty good.
Is he better than an alternative, though? If I want the Jets to be the worst they can be next year, just at this point, just out of pure fun and spite, because I don't really see him as a serious threat. Is he not still better than what they would have if they moved on?
Well, the only thing I would say to you is that when they got rid of Favre and they traded Favre to the Vikings, they got the Sanchez and they went to the AFC Championship game twice.
Well, that is true. That is true.
Now, that ended up crippling them again because they had to pay Sanchez. But I just think that you'd rather
you called this thing 100%. This is a disaster.
The Jets are the Jets.
Complete flop.
That story yesterday, I could not. ESPN had a long feature. I had to set some time so I could be by myself and read and enjoy that.
What has gone wrong? All right, we got Chris Harrington coming up next. Then we got Righter Than Right trivia, where among other things, we will be giving away. If you can either be Righter Than Right or play honorably, we'll be giving away 4 tickets to the Nuggets game.
Sunday night's Sunday Nuggets game.
Yep. Sunday night Nuggets game. Also, 9-1 wrestling and the Coffee Expo.
Yep.
It's a massive prize here in the second hour. So stay tuned for that. And for Chris Harrington, I will tell you that if you are selling your house, call Josh Heisa. I really do mean this. I've been looking to downsize and I just drive around, look at houses. Occasionally I go to open houses. And the houses that I see on the market are always just on the market. They're just hanging out on the market. Nothing seems to move. It's that much more critical that if you are selling your house, you have someone who knows how to market a house like Josh Heisa. I told you about Trudy, who heard us talking about it. She hired Josh Heisa to sell her house. Within 24 hours, she had multiple offers. Josh is aggressive. He's creative. Flexible fees, no upfront costs, let you out of your contract at any time, risk-free. It's Josh Heisa and his team at Keller Williams Realty. The phone number, again, 901-461-8147, or joshhasthebuyers.com. Chris joins us on the other side. It's Jeff Calkins Show on a Thursday, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.